One of the big questions of the 2016 presidential race is, will we finally see a woman in the White House as president? But there's a little-known secret that's finally coming to light. From late 1919 until March of 1921, a woman was the de facto president of the United States. University of Michigan physician and medical historian Dr. Howard Markell is back with us. And Howard, we're talking about First Lady Edith Galt Wilson. And this story you're about to tell us is pretty stunning in terms of it not leaking out to reporters and to the world.
Nobody really knew. But Woodrow Wilson on October 2nd of 1919 had a massive stroke that left him paralyzed on his left side and certainly left him incapacitated for the rest of his presidency until March of 1921.
And this is a man whose health had been fragile. There have been a lot of warning signs, hadn't there?
Yeah, Woodrow was never the picture of health. He was known to overwork. In fact, one physician thought that Woodrow Wilson would never finish out his first term, that he would die before his first term was out. That doctor was wrong, but his own personal physician, a man named Carrie Grayson, often worried that Woodrow Wilson simply worked too hard. And that was especially true in 1919. So imagine, World War I is over, and President Wilson is really the first president to spend extended time, I mean months, in Europe negotiating what we now know as the Versailles Treaty or the Treaty of Versailles and, of course, the ill-fated League of Nations. So you're going to have a war to end all wars. This was the treaty and the League that was going to end all wars. He was actually awarded the Nobel Prize for 1919 for peace for these efforts. But it wasn't so rosy at home in terms of ratifying that treaty.
A lot of pushback at home. So he had to do a huge selling job, didn't he?
He did. The United States Senate was very much opposed. It was a consortium of Republicans. Wilson was a Democrat. And there was a lot of pushback, and he sensed that by the summer that he was going to lose. And so he decided to go on an 8,000-mile train barnstorming trip.
This exhausting, exhausting train trip. And there was trouble during the train trip?
Yeah, he got sick during the trip. You know, he complained of splitting headaches. He had asthma, so especially went into the West in the Rockies and the air was thinner. He had quite a bit of trouble. At one point, he had a blinding headache and blurred vision. And double vision. Which,
what does that tell you?
Well, as a doctor now, it's probably a transient ischemic attack, which is a mini blockage of blood flow to the brain.
A lot of people call them mini strokes.
Mini strokes, yeah. And it's generally, we take them very seriously because it's a harbinger of the more serious real stroke.
So they brought him back to Washington and right to the White House, and then this monster stroke happened just several days after he got back, just four days
later. On the 26th of September, the train turned around, sped back to Union Station. They got there on the 28th of September. He was apparently well enough to walk through Union Station and even tip his hat to some of the passerbys. But the photographs of him from that walk, he looks terribly haggard and terribly thin. They went back to the White House for enforced rest, which is really all you could do back then.
Sure.
And then October 2nd happened.
And what exactly happened?
Well, there are lots of different versions. In one version, he woke up and he said to Edith, his wife, "My hand is numb. I can't feel it. Could you rub it?" In other versions of the story, he actually went to the bathroom and he collapsed, fell, and hit his head against the plumbing. And in fact, Edith is supposedly heroically put him back into bed. But she nevertheless ran outside of the Lincoln bedroom to the hall and called down to the chief usher and said, "Get Dr. Grayson immediately," which he did. Grayson came up in a few minutes and he came out after about maybe 10 minutes after his exam and he said, "My God, the president is paralyzed."
Wow. So he has a stroke. Then the amazing thing is what happened from there to the end of his term.
It was one big secret. And it's amazing in today's era of not just media or radio or television, Twitter, the blogosphere. I mean, everyone's a citizen journalist with their own cameras. Nobody really had access to the president. They said he was ill and he couldn't see people. And Mrs. Wilson was sort of his go-between. And in fact, the extent of his stroke and more importantly, the extent of his long-term disability had never gotten out. And she was really the wall between his cabinet. They didn't get to see him either, let alone United States senators or congressmen or what have you.
I cannot believe that did not in almost a year and a half bubble out.
I know.
Amazing.
I know. Today there'd be 12 investigations of what was going on before the day is out.
Now, she says what about that time?
Well, years later, she wrote her memoir. Mm-hmm. And she wrote extensively that I never made a decision. I always edited what my husband would see. I was his go-between. I would carefully bring things to him. And I had to decide when and how to bring things to him. But all the decisions were actually made by my husband. She was very clear on that. But, of course, historians, we love to look at other people's mail. That's what we do for a living and everything else that they leave behind. And Wilson historians have found time and time again that that's not quite the case. Mrs. Wilson said she was simply a steward. But in reality, she was the de facto president of the United States.
Unbelievable. That it really is. And the way that we deal with things now is the 25th Amendment. But there was no 25th Amendment then.
Right. You know, the problem with the Constitution as it was written then was that there's a plan for succession of the vice president in case of death, but not a disability. And it wasn't until 1967 that the 25th Amendment was passed that allows for disability. But there are still presidential scholars and presidential health scholars. There's even a field of presidential health scholars who have met and discussed and debate and feel that the 25th Amendment is not specific enough. And this is probably especially true in light of 21st century medicine, where we can do miraculous things and we can even keep people alive who formerly used to die rather quickly. And so there are a lot of people who feel that that succession needs to be better spelled out.
Needs to be revisited. An amazing, amazing story. University of Michigan physician and medical historian Dr. Howard Markel, who, of course, is a regular contributor to PBS NewsHour. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.